Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
Books. Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gutenberg? It's a rhetorical question, sir. But where would we be without books?
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and this is Bookworm. Today, one of my favorite poets, who is no longer alive, has a selected poems that's been published by Boa Editions. It is the work of Lucille Clifton. She was born in 1936 and died in 2010. She was an award-winning poet. She won the National Book Award for her book, Blessing the Boats, New and Selected Poems. There was an enormous collected poems, almost complete, but the editor of this new selected poems, called How to Carry Water, whose name is Adesalis Germay, is with us today, Lucille Clifton. She was on the show Bookworm several times. We did public events together. She was a woman of enormous power, and I would say mystic spirit. I loved talking to her, and now to be able to talk to someone who loves her work and who has edited a selected poems. Adesalis, by the way, is also not only a lover of Lucille Clifton, but a poet herself. She's published 3 books of poetry so far. They've been well respected and award-winning books. I've been reading them and I love them, and I can't wait for her own next book, because we'll be hearing from her about her own work. But today it's Lucille Clifton. Tell us about How to Carry Water.
I found the title at the very end of gathering the selections, and the title is from a phrase in her poem Water Sign Woman, and that this book feels to me like a lesson in how to carry water.
Let's hear the poem.
Okay, Water Sign Woman. The woman who feels everything sits in her new house waiting for someone to come who knows how to carry water without spilling. Who knows why the desert is sprinkled with salt, why tomorrow is such a long and ominous word. They say to the feel things woman that little she dreams is possible, that there is only so much joy to go around, only so much water. There are no questions for this, no arguments. She has to forget to remember the edge of the sea, they say, to forget how to swim to the edge. She has to forget how to feel. The woman who feels everything sits in her new house, retaining the secret the desert knew when it walked up from the ocean. The desert, so beautiful in her eyes. Water will come again. She feels what the desert feels. She waits.
Oh, Water Sign Woman by Lucille Clifton, as read to us by the editor of her selected poems, Adesalis Germay, Lucille Clifton. She was a powerful figure. She herself writes about things that most people don't write about. She was a large-hipped woman, and she writes about her body. She writes about her relation to men, and she writes about the relation other women have with men, that her sister was able to have with men. I think of her work in general as comprised of magical spells that are so powerful that as you read her, her poetry, which is extremely direct and simple to read, but not simple to achieve, it lodges in your body. It lodges in your mind. Now tell me, Adesalis, being able to work on putting together a book out of her thousands of poems, a book that a person could sit down and read in a couple of days and have a deep recognition of an aspect of Lucille Clifton. Can you describe this Lucille Clifton you were isolating?
It felt like such an impossible thing to say yes to when I was first like approached, a huge honor, but also like, how does one go about doing this? And I think I loved that you said mystic or mystical at some point, because I felt like I should very much follow what the poems teach me to do, which is I read and read and just paid attention to the resonances and repetitions that I was noticing, and eventually came to realize that the poems that kept kind of raising their heads were poems that had to do with lineage of especially of women in the family, but not only that, Black womanhood, politics, climate crisis. And so, of course, all of these things are connected. And I also realized that I was going to, along the way, realize that I was going to let the poems move from the chronologically from the first of the poems included to the end without breaking them up, without having page markers that said, now we're entering into another book, but that those page markers would be there in the table of contents so that a student could really read to see what was happening book by book, but that it feels to me that her work is something that transcends a book even, and that there's a way that you could just, you know, read her all the way through and see that the things that her concerns, her priorities, her commitments, that truth-telling was always at the center. And so there was something about acknowledging time, but also not getting in the way by inserting bookmarks felt critical to me, because there's a way that she troubles time in the most wonderful way.
I want to tell my listeners we are taping from our respective residences, so you may hear some unusual sounds. I'm talking to Adesalis Ermai about the book of selected poems, How to Carry Water. It's the work of the great poet Lucille Clifton, and it's published by Boa Editions. One of the poems ends, "The truth is knocking furiously at the door." And the poems seem to be battered by truth. She's not going to lie about anything. Mm-hmm. Not her body, not the time that her father violated her when she was a young girl, mm-hmm. not her sister's period of prostitution, mm-hmm. but not just those things, mm-hmm. celebrating birth, mm-hmm. celebrating the achievements of her children, particularly her daughters, mm-hmm. celebrating life and celebrating the trees. When she was living in Baltimore, she sees them with fresh eyes. Mm-hmm. She moves several times during her life. She even comes up to New York City to visit with Toni Morrison, who was for a period the editor of her memoir.
Yeah.
And Toni says, it was too short a time, come mm-hmm. back. Mm-hmm. And you, Adesalis, hear that echoing through her poetry. Come back, come mm-hmm. back, come back to the truth. Mm-hmm. Come back. Don't be a whimsical type. whatever magic you work is the magic of truth telling.
And I think that that's part of what so many people turn to her for, that there's such integrity in that commitment to truth. And so when you are somebody who is really turning to a poem to help you survive, you're looking for someone who has some truth to tell and who's also saying, I have lived long enough to write it, which is a deep, deep hope. And so I think, you know, I recited her poem, Won't You Celebrate With Me, to some students years ago. And there was somebody facing me, a student in the room, crying, just mouthing the words back to me. And I think that so many of us hold on to Lucille Clifton because she is telling us the truth of things and insisting on beauty and kinship, even through the most difficult of circumstances.
But she seemed to have come from a different plane of existence. She says that when she went to college, she wanted to be an actress. Let's hear that. She said it in a show that I did on Bookworm.
I was writing before I went to Howard, but it never occurred to me to think that I would be a poet. I wanted to be an actress, and I thought that there was some matter of choice in what you wanted to be. Writing poems wasn't about a matter of choice for me. It was something that I had done since I was a little girl. It seemed as natural to me as breathing was. And I think it was coming from college I realized that perhaps this thing that I did and that I tended to take for granted was important.
She realizes that what comes naturally to her are poems, and that she would have to be a different person to be an actress, but she is already a poet.
When I think of Lucille Clifton, whose mother was a poet, and who Lucille Clifton remembers her mother sitting beside the window, rocking in a chair and reciting these old poems. And so those were some of the poet sounds of her childhood. And she remembers her mother burning her own poems because she was not given permission by her father to publish the poems. And then here's Lucille Clifton, who has this mother poet and then becomes a poet who shares her work. I've always been interested in sitting quietly with something as a reader. And so the extent to which a reader is a poet, that maybe that's always been there. But as somebody who writes poems, I feel that that's probably something that I realized much, much later, and especially much, much, much later than Lucille Clifton did for herself. Because she, I think, I found a line of a poem from when she was 10. And I thought, oh, of course, of course. This is from a conversation between her and Carolyn Forché, but she recites this line, these lines. Lucille Clifton, age 10. The world has writ the letter now, writ the letter now. 'Twas never wrote before.
I think that we all somehow have within us a thing that we always are and were. It was a family joke in my family. Both my father and mother would say, Michael is only good when he's reading and he's sleeping. And it was possibly true. I was, I think, my attention needed to be completely riveted, and it was riveted by books. Now, I think of Lucille Clifton as an instinctual poet in that way, that the sound of poetry, no matter what it would become, how it would be shaped, sculpted, understood, how she would face the things that life presented to her, as she said, every day trying to kill her and failing, that she managed to turn all experience to poetry.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think all poets can do that. I don't think that's necessary to be a poet. I know my friend Mary Ruffel feels mm-hmm. that way, that she can inhabit, breathe from experience to poetry. Mm-hmm. There are some poets like that, and some poets develop that mm-hmm. in the course of their career. They develop the instinctual ability to project the poetic. And I'll tell you, Lucille Clifton was the author of her poems, and they were always inside her. How did you first find the work? How old were you when you first read Lucille Clifton?
Yeah, I was. I know that I came upon her work for the first time when I was in high school. So somewhere between 13 and 17, I just happened upon her work. I was reading books out of a deep loneliness, I think. I always loved to read, but when I found her work, I was really searching for the languages of my people. But I think it must have been the Book of Light. I remember where I was standing in the library, which direction I was facing. It was that much of a moment where I just thought, oh my God, you can write in ink on paper what I can hear in my innermost ear. You know, that feeling of, oh, how is this carried by ink? And so I came to her in high school and carried her very closely since then. And something you said, Michael, about Miss Lucille, I think of her as somebody who's, even the people who weren't thought of as poets in her family, she writes in her memoir, Generations, about receiving this letter from her father who didn't know how to write, and it took him all day to send her this tiny bit of language, which of course carried more than just the letters, but also the hours of that day. I think of her describing the handiwork and the doilies of her neighbor. So she's somebody whose, I think, attention to the imaginative strategies of others, whether they call themselves poets or not, was critical, like was foundational to her understanding of what a poem could be and how a poem could get made.
I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to KCRW's Bookworm. I'm talking with Etta Salis Germay, who is a poet herself. She has edited the selected poems of the marvelous Black poet Lucille Clifton. It's called How to Carry Water, Selected Poems of Lucille Clifton, and it's published by Boa Editions. We'll continue after this short break.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm. And I'm talking with Etta Salis Germay about the new collection, How to Carry Water, Selected Poems of Lucille Clifton. Etta Salis Germay selected the poems and introduces them in the book in a marvelous poetic introduction. Now, Lucille writes about writing these poems for all women, but particularly Dahomey women. What does that mean?
Mm-hmm. So Dahomey is a West African kingdom and Miss Lucille traces her history back among her histories to the Dahomey women who, in the history that I know, were known among other things for being these Black women warriors. And so for Miss Lucille, the importance of her lineage and the ways that that lineage is carried in her own writing. In her book, Generations, she talks about making this sound for all of her mothers.
You know, Sonia Sanchez said to you that mm-hmm. she hoped in this book that the old-fashioned smile that the name Lucille Clifton would ordinarily provoke, that people would see more than the smile, that they would see the Lucille Clifton capable of ferocity, capable of being a warrior. But I want to confess that I grew up with my grandmother, who was virtually she came from Russia. Jews in Russia couldn't do anything. She had to go and steal my uncle from the army and brought him to America. And my mother was the only child born in America. But Lucille reminded me of my grandmother. And I don't mean the old-fashioned smile. Mm-hmm. I mean the endurance, the power, the ability to experience the new, and to insist that all of it, every little bit, was a part of the importance of her experience.
But when you think about the imagination that it took and takes for people to live just one day, and especially in the generations before us, that resilience and strength and courage and imagination as being a critical part of those practices. It's something that strikes me deeply. And also, I know Lucille Clifton is looking in all directions, back and forward across time, writing poems towards history and now and future. Yeah.
When you were at Emory, you found 10 previously unpublished poems, and you got the permission of her daughters to publish them. You know, we don't go into someone's papers and say, we can publish this. Elaborate permission is required, and you got it respectfully. Can you tell me about that?
I was in those archives with my dear friend and poet, Camila Aisha Moon, and it felt very much like a sister poet journey that we were on. And many of these poems that are in the new selected, we found together in this room and in one of her folders. And I just, there's such stunning poems, and I don't know when they're from. They didn't have dates on them, which I just love. I love that so much that there's a kind of impossibility of ordering them in time, that they're just these gleaming pieces. I have some guesses, but I could be wrong, and I love that. Like, it's not about mastery. It's about the mystery of it. And as my dear friend Russ Gay says, but besides that, you know, I felt so deeply about including these poems and shared with her daughters. It was an honor to get to share a poem for one of her daughters that I came across, and to just send an email and send a picture of what I found. And I shared with the publisher, and I just hoped that they felt as strongly about the poems as I did. And they said yes, and I feel really excited for readers, because there's a way, especially the last poem, Quartz Lake, Alaska, there's a way that the poems just, they go out like a cloud or something, like some elemental something. They feel like they're just lasting, and I feel very excited that others will get to feel the newness of her.
Yes, it's extraordinary. The selected poems, How to Carry Water, begins in the rigor of chronology, but it ends with poems that are mysteries. We end in a cloud. Would you read that final poem, please?
Sure. Deep autumn and all the tourists have gone south with the geese and fickle sun. Only those things remain which can bear the frown of winter, the ice stars, the raven, the moon, and the solitude, keeping their long faith with forsaken things. The lake turns its cold face, is no one's mirror, and the sky pouts back. Everything wakes and sleeps in forest time, to the soft drum of wind among the pines, to the snow forever falling and the long dark bringing its constellations, bright cruciforms against the sky, lighting the quiet way on snow for winter migrations of caribou or wolf or phantom grief moving out and away in a silent ritual of passage.
That was a previously unpublished poem, Quartz Lake, Alaska, by Lucille Clifton, read by my guest, the editor of the collection, How to Carry Water, Selected Poems from BOA Editions. My guest is Adesalus Germai. Why don't I spell that for you, for people who may need to write it down? A-R-A-C-E-L-I-S G-I-R-M-A-Y. I've been talking with Adesalus Germai about the book she edited, How to Carry Water, Selected Poems of Lucille Clifton, published by BOA Editions. Thank you, Adesalus, for joining me.
Thank you so much, Michael. My honor, my gift. Thank you.
It's been a pleasure. I want to tell my listeners we are taping from our respective residences, so you may hear some unusual sounds. You can visit kcrw.com/bookworm for a podcast of today's show, also available at Apple, Spotify, and all other podcast services. It can also be listened to on demand with KCRW's smartphone apps. It's broadcast all over the country. It's even broadcast twice a week in Berlin. Special thanks to Bookworm Show collaborators Alan Howard and Sean Sullivan, and technical director Mario Diaz. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms. I am a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcasts, the most recent ones, at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mayle of Sparks.
A bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm when Jay Perini is our guest.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air. New music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.